Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Wellness 101. I'm your host, Dr. TJ. We have an exciting show today. Well, it's exciting, but yet I'm a little nervous about it because today we're going to be talking about environmental toxins, and I've actually written a few of these out, and I'm not so certain I'm going to be able to pronounce all of them on the air correctly because, as you all know, these are chemicals that we're exposed to, and they're very difficult to pronounce. So I will do my best if we don't laugh at me while I try to say some of these things, because some of them are pretty crazy. So let's dive in. So environmental toxins. Well, Aaron, are you over there?
I'm here. This is something that we get so many questions about.
Tons.
Yes. And I feel like people will start out trying to be cautious about what they're putting on and in their body. And then the more you read, the more you get to the point where you're just like, why do I even try? Basically everything that we're exposed to is poison. So we're going to try to break it down for you today to let you know which things you should be concerned about and which things are not quite as big of a deal, so you can kind of prioritize and know what exactly you need to be doing to keep yourself as healthy as possible.
Right. Because we live in an industrialized world, well, at least an industrialized country, and we are exposed because of this to thousands and thousands of toxins. Some are known to be harmful, while effects of others are basically unknown. And they're unknown because there's not studies on them, or the studies haven't been performed adequately, or whatever. But regardless, like Aaron said, there are steps that you can do and that you can take to protect yourself. I mean, the toxins in our environment are everywhere. They're practically impossible to avoid. So if you're taking steps to limit your exposure, the question is, should you be worried about the low levels that are still in your system? And the honest answer to that question is probably just, it depends. Just depends. Every person is different. We're going to talk about, in this show, the traditional view of toxicity and how it's outdated, what factors influence somebody's susceptibility to a toxin, and then what you can do to decrease your toxic burden if you have been exposed. I mean, like I said before, we're exposed to thousands and thousands of toxins, whether we're inhaling them or if they're put on our skin or if we eat them with our food or if, you know, they are injected. Sometimes they are. Common exposures would be things like health and beauty products. And I know you ladies out there, that's a big one. A lot of you wear makeup and things like that every day. And a lot of those have toxins in them. Pesticides and herbicides, we're exposed to those. You know, they're sprayed all over our crops and stuff. Industrial pollutants, there's a lot of those. Mold is huge. And, you know, if you're not from the St. Louis area and you're listening to this on a podcast, we're broadcasting from St. Louis, and it's like the mold capital of the world, I think, because we have two rivers that basically come together, the Illinois River and the Mississippi River, and it's just kind of a flat, swampy area kind of around here, and there's just lots of mold, environmental mold all the time. But then you have, you know, houses that have mold in them. Once you get this stuff, it's hard to get rid of. Just ask anyone who's had mold in their house. Oh my gosh, it's just nightmarish to try and get rid of. Other things would be like preservatives and flame retardants. A lot of us don't really think about the fact that the beds that we sleep on were sprayed with flame retardants. That's kind of why they stink so bad when they come to your house brand new. Petrochemical fuels and solvents. And then plastics and cookware is another place that we're exposed to these things. I mean, there's no way to deny that every single person has some sort of toxic chemical inside of them at any given point. But there's a group out there that I like. It's called the Environmental Working Group, or EWG. They have a website, EWG.org, right?
I think it's EWG. Probably should have looked that up before
the
show.
Yeah.
I know I go on it all the time. I think it's just bookmarked.
They have an app. Like, I have it on my phone. You can download an app, the Environmental Working Group. So basically, on the Environmental Working Group's webpage, they report that the average person carries 91 toxic chemicals in his or her blood and urine at any given moment. And then they did another study that found, they studied 10 newborn babies, and they found that there were 232 different toxins in the umbilical cord blood of those babies. That is a lot of toxins.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. And that goes to show, I mean, you know, so we've got 91 toxic chemicals in our blood and urine at any given time, which probably means that some of those are getting flushed out, and so that they don't stay in our body for an extended period of time. Most likely the umbilical cord blood is just kind of, you know, taking a hold of those and keeping them. And that's terrifying to think about the fact that, you know, that is what is nourishing a growing child.
Right. And, scary. I mean,
yeah, it is scary.
Most mamas freak out when you tell them that. Trust me, I know. We've said it to mamas before. Hey, we got to decrease your toxic load. This is what's going on. We don't want to make sure. Or they come in. Hey, I'm pregnant, or we're trying to get pregnant. What can we do? And so that's stuff that we'll talk about later in the show. So one of the things that we've kind of been talked to about with these toxins is that, oh, it's low levels, it doesn't matter.
Yes, well, we hear that all the time.
Yeah,
it's in there, but it's a small enough level that it's not actually going to do any harm.
Right. That's exactly right. Traditional studies for toxicity basically are trying to find the lowest observed adverse effect level or the no observed adverse effect level. So they're basically trying to figure out, you know, at what point is there an adverse effect level? So they're trying to find the point at which that toxin is known to cause harm. And then they lower it experimentally until the toxic effects disappear. That's how they arrive at these levels. But they're usually testing large doses to determine way, way down the road endpoints. I remember when I was getting my PhD, a little side note here, came across a study. Somebody brought it into one of the classes that I had, a statistics class, and it was a rat study where they were exposed to artificial sweeteners. And I don't remember which one, but it was a particular one, aspartame or something like that. And they found that it gave rats cancer. And aspartame is neurotoxic, just as a side note. It kills nerve cells. We know that it does. There's lots of research that does it. But in the particular study, they were giving these rats a dosage equivalent to those rats drinking 600 full cans of soda sweetened with that every single day for like 10 months. Something crazy. I mean, why are we studying at levels that high? I don't understand why we have to go to that level. And that's a lot of what research is doing, is they're testing these things at super high levels that we're not really exposed to, and we're going to get into this in a little bit, these low levels are extremely dangerous and maybe even more so dangerous than the really high levels.
Well, and also, I mean, at the really high levels, okay, you see a reaction, you know, fairly quickly. But then that doesn't mean, you know, at low levels, maybe you don't see a reaction at all, but that doesn't mean that over time there isn't going to be a
right
reaction.
20, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years.
And that's really what we're dealing with. And the other thing that I think is really important is that they are testing one toxin at a time.
Right. And not comparing it with anything else at all. And, you know, well, we know that there's synergistic effects with some things. So synergy basically means, if we use math as an example, 1 + 1 is 2. That's normal. But in synergy, 1 + 1 can equal 3, or 1 + 1 can equal 10 million. It's how they work together, and they can have a bigger effect than the sum of their parts. And that sort of stuff can happen with these chemicals. So,
right.
You know, they're also, another thing, Aaron, is they're assuming that everyone is going to respond exactly the same. And we know that's not true. There's stuff that makes every single person different. We have different genetic makeups, and we're exposed to different things, and our ability to detoxify may be different than the next person. So we just have a bigger issue looking at this and saying these broad general terms of, oh, well, this is safe because we tested at this level and it's fine. May not be fine for everyone.
Right. And probably isn't fine for a lot of people. I mean, and I know, you know, I've had a lot of various health issues. And before I started, you know, doing things more naturally and actually, you know, fixing myself, I had been put on a number of different prescriptions. And it was crazy to me how, you know, and that's just with prescription medication, how many times I was told, you know, when I'd have side effects, they'd say, well, that shouldn't happen. You're not anywhere near. I mean, that happens at like 20 times that dosage. And it's the same thing with toxins. Obviously I was having the reaction. So just because it wasn't shown that most people do, that doesn't mean that, you know, these things aren't affecting you. I've also had skincare products that I've had horrible reactions to, and they're very popular. So clearly no one else was having the reaction. So
it
can definitely happen.
That's exactly right. You know, and there's also research that it's growing because they're starting to look at this stuff that's indicating that these chronic low doses of toxins can be very harmful. So one study, it's frogs, so it doesn't really relate but to humans. But at the same time, it's important to know these frogs, they were given a mixture of 9 pesticides at 10 to 100 times below the EPA standard for a safe level. And these frogs had slowed growth, they had higher levels of corticosteroid, and they were more likely to be infected with pathogens, which is basically just a screaming red flag saying, hey, these studies that they're doing aren't good enough because look at what we did here with these little frogs, and we lowered the levels to well below what they said were dangerous or were safe, rather, and they still had serious problems.
Yeah, and I think it should be stressed. That's 10 to 100 times below the EPA standard. But the fact that there were 9 of them mixed together was most likely
what the problem was.
The problem was, we assume that, you know, when they do these studies, that you'll only be exposed to one pesticide, which is ridiculous.
Right, exactly. So, all right, we've got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about endocrine disruptors and these low levels of hormones and what they do. And we're going to talk about how there are different responses at high doses compared to low doses. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have a wonderful show in progress here talking about environmental toxins. Luckily, we haven't gotten into the pronunciation of a lot of these, but we're getting ready to, and I'm not very excited about my inability to pronunciate some of these words.
Just go with it. No one's going to know if it's right or not.
Yeah, yes, sir. It's exactly right, because I'm pretty sure the scientists that developed this aren't really sure how to pronounce these things either. So when we left, we were talking about how current studies and traditional studies, rather, look to find the lowest adverse effect level and then the no observed adverse effect level. And they assume that all people are going to respond exactly the same when it's really just not true. And we were talking about how low doses can be big problems, and they can be what's called endocrine disruptors, or these things that disrupt our hormones and our endocrine system in our body. And we talked about the study where the frogs were given a mixture of 9 pesticides at 10 to 100 times below EPA standard levels, and they had problems. And I mean, that's just goes to show you the studies that looked at each of these individual pesticides were looking at an isolated chemical in the study. They weren't looking at any of this stuff together. And when you combine these things together, which is what's happening out there in the real world, the problems that happen are huge.
Right.
They're long lasting. So in 2002, the National Toxicology Program reported, I had trouble with toxicology.
I know. This is not
That's because
good.
I was prepping for, oh boy. The National Toxicology Program reported adverse effects from low dose exposure to common endocrine disruptors. So this is low dose exposure to common things. They're not commonly pronounced. Bisphenol A, that's one that a lot of us are familiar with. It's BPA. We see a lot of containers that will say BPA-free. That's a big endocrine disruptor in a lot of plastics. The next one is genistein. I'm not sure on that one. It's an isoflavone derived from soy. Methoxychlor, which is an insecticide. Nonylphenol, an industrial chemical that can be found in drinking water, and vinclozolin, which is a fungicide. A lot of these are in rodent studies, but that's what we use to study some of these chemicals. 10 years later, in a large review, very similar to that, to what we're talking about, they were finding more adverse effects were confirmed for low doses of these chemicals that were plasticizers, pesticides, phytoestrogens, industrial chemicals, preservatives, surfactants, flame retardants. Again, this whole flame retardant thing is a big one with beds. You know, at the Institute, I recommend that people are going to buy a new bed to get that bed at home, open it up, take all the plastic off of it. If you're buying a conventional bed and you're not getting an organic bed, take that stuff off. Let that thing air out for a month minimum before you lay on it. We actually had a patient that decided that they thought that they knew better, and they were going to just go ahead and sleep on that thing. And the very next time they were in the clinic, all they did was talk about how they laid down. They couldn't fall asleep that night. They actually had to the next day move the bed. They went and slept in the other room.
Right. Well, and we've heard a lot of people that do that because, I mean, realistically, it's not very easy to put a new bed into your house and then just let it sit there for a month. But we do have people who go and sleep in another room for a month or so.
Right.
And it makes a huge difference because, I mean, or at least be aware of the fact that it could really be disrupting you.
Right. It happens. So these endocrine disruptors, they can mimic and interfere with the body's natural circulating hormones. And that is very, very concerning. BPA, it's like I said before, it's the one that gets the most press, but a wide range of substances is continually being added to the list of common things. Things like dioxins, PCBs, which is polychlorinated biphenols, and other pesticides. I think it was, this will date this show, but it just within the last week or so, I read where California is going to put glyphosate on their list of carcinogens.
Right.
So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
But when you look at BPA levels that have been found in human serum, so human blood BPA levels, literally we're talking about nanograms per milliliter, okay? So to put this in perspective, nanograms per milliliter would be basically a teaspoon of water in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. And that may be way too small to be significant. But let's talk about young kids, girls in particular. So young girls, their circulating blood estrogen levels in young girls are 100 times smaller than that at 15 picograms per milliliter. That means that then the BPA would be much higher than their normally circulating estrogen levels. And that is scary, right? It's very easy to see when you put it in that kind of perspective how low doses of toxins can have massive effects when they outnumber our normal circulating hormones.
Right, right. No, and I just want to take a step back from this for a second because, you know, those of you listening, I mean, hopefully this becomes frustrating because BPA for a long time was told to everyone that this was safe. And
right. We,
you know, there wasn't any problem with it. And we all believed it, right? Because we don't know. I mean, we can barely pronounce it.
So, we were told smoking was safe, too.
Right. We were told a lot of things were safe. And there are still, you have to specifically look for BPA-free plastics. I mean,
right. There,
it's still used.
But my guess is there's still going to be something else in there.
No, exactly. I mean, yeah, that's true. But it does make a difference, and it's frustrating that for so long we had no idea that something so toxic was, you know, in products that we used every single day. And I think this just goes to show, here we're talking about this today, that there are so many things out there that we don't actually know the effects of.
Right.
And when we don't know the long-term effects, a lot of times then after these studies, they come out and say, oh, it's safe. We'll just put it in. So, I mean, for those of you who are listening and thinking, oh, people are just getting crazy about trying to avoid all of this stuff because it's, you know, if it was really going to kill us, then it wouldn't be in the products. That's not true. It's just going to kill you very slowly.
Right. And very painfully because you're, you know, this is the stuff that chronic disease is made of. And chronic disease equals falling apart one body part at a time rather than, you know, dying peacefully in your sleep when you're about 105, 110 years
right.
old.
And chronic disease is what is skyrocketing right now. And so maybe you aren't going to be sensitive enough for some of these toxins to cause a problem. But what are the chances that you're coming into contact with thousands of them and you're not sensitive to any of them?
Right.
Very unlikely.
And the sad thing is the regulation and the testing is all set up to test this high toxic level, and they just test until there's no effect that goes away. But then we completely miss what happens when you're exposed to low levels for long periods of time
with thousands of other toxins.
Right. Right. With thousands. I mean, since World War II, 88,000 chemicals toxins have been approved to be in our land, air, and water.
Right.
I don't know how many days there's been since World War II. But since we only have about 365 in a year, and it hasn't been that many years since the end of World War II, I'm guessing that's more than one per day has been approved.
Yeah.
I think Liz is over here looking up the number of days. She's going to calculate it up for us, ladies and gentlemen, right here on the fly. We'll be back with that in just a moment. But yeah, I mean, so the question is there such a safe thing? Or is there anything like a safe low level exposure? I don't think so. I don't think so. How many days was it, Liz? Oh, she's got to grab the microphone. Sorry.
It's not an exact number, but it's close to 26,000.
So 26,000 days since the end of World War II with 88,000. So that's telling me that we're approving 4 chemicals per day.
Almost.
That's just simple math, ladies and gentlemen. That's not that common core math. That's simple math. Okay, so where are we going to go from here? My gosh. I mean, the toxic susceptibility is extremely individualized. How we respond is going to be completely different than the next person. I respond differently than Aaron, and we're both going to respond differently than Liz.
Right. Well, and I mean, there are a lot of things that actually go into what determines toxicity, you know, to, like the level of exposure, how much of it were you actually exposed to?
Right.
The duration of exposure. So how long were you exposed? Frequency of exposure. Is it something that you came into contact with once, or is it something that you are using every single day? The synergistic relationship that we talked about before. Chemicals, when they're together, can produce an effect that is much more harmful than it would by itself. Timing. Were you exposed in utero or during pregnancy or while you were already sick or, you know, compromised by another condition?
And this during pregnancy thing, this is a big one at the Institute right now, because for some reason we've run into a string. And it's funny how patients and things come in groups. You know, we'll get droves, we'll get, you know, a bunch of this, and then the next problem comes and it's a bunch of that. And then we've run lately into a group of Eastern Europeans who were in Eastern Europe when Chernobyl melted down, and they were exposed to all of that uranium. And not only are we seeing that, we actually have some children who we know that their moms were exposed to that, and they have high levels of these toxicities or these toxic chemicals in their system when we test. So we know that exposure, both being there and even in utero, for certain clinical firsthand experience talking here, this happens. So we've got to do everything that we can to make sure that a body is as healthy as it can be to detoxify this stuff. All right, we got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more about toxicity and the individualized toxicity levels and what we can do to help detoxify. You're listening to Wellness 101. We are having a wonderful discussion on environmental toxins today. When we left last time, if you're just tuning in, we were talking about what determines toxicity. And Aaron rattled off a list of things like level of exposure, how long you're exposed, how frequently you're exposed, and then the synergistic relationships that exist between chemicals. So one of the least studied and definitely the least understood of it all is the human variability component. How, you know, and I talked about this earlier, how each of us are different in how we respond and react to things, and what affects me may not affect the next person, but may affect someone else you know, way differently. That is one of the big pieces of this puzzle. And so if we tie this back to physiology, and I like to tie a lot of things back to physiology because that's what I do. The liver, it's our main organ responsible for detoxification. And it has this, has phases of detoxification. And a lot of times people talk about, you know, really phase one and phase two liver detoxification. They leave out phase three. So let's, I'm going to talk a little bit about those. So the first phase is when we start to process the toxins through the, through oxidation and reduction or, and or hydrolysis. So these are just reactions that take place to begin the process of detoxifying. Then we move to phase two. Phase two is breaking these toxins down into byproducts that are water soluble that our body is then able to move around and excrete. And then phase three is when we talk about cell proteins or cell membrane proteins rather, and these things control the modified products elimination. But what's really interesting is that sometimes the products at the end of phase one are way more toxic than the toxin that you began with. And one of those examples is when we drink alcohol or ethanol. Ethanol gets converted in phase one to this component or this chemical called acetaldehyde. And that stuff is way more toxic to us than the alcohol is itself. And so if phase two detoxification isn't functioning the way it's supposed to because we're missing, you know, we don't have enough nutrition, we don't have enough B vitamins, or if we've got some sort of disease process that's affecting it, these toxic byproducts from phase one detoxification can hang out in the body and create all these bad side effects. And so we have to make sure that you're, you know, when you're doing this, that you're able to detoxify these things. I mean, we have people come in. We just had a person come in the, a couple days ago. I don't remember exactly. This last week with known hot levels of heavy metals. I mean, he had the test in front of us and we're sitting here looking and they came wanting to do this specific detoxification, this chelation therapy that we offer at the clinic. And we had to step back and say, look, wait a minute. We have to go back and we have to get the whole system working well before we start to detoxify these chemicals out of the system. Because if we start to try to detoxify this, it's going to make you way sicker. You're going to feel way worse. And this is a young man who has been through the ringer for no older than he is. He's having a really hard time, sleeps a lot because his whole system is just starting to shut down because of this toxic exposure that he's had.
Right. And not just feel worse, because I know a lot of people, when you're feeling so bad, you're like, I don't care if I have to feel really bad for a little bit of time. I just want to get it out. You know, I just want to go through the chelation. But if your body can't process that stuff out once it's chelated, then you're going to have a major issue.
Huge issue. And these things, well, they don't like to leave the body. So they'll go set up roost somewhere else. And so that's a big thing. You got to make sure that, you know, if you're out there looking for someone to help you, that they understand that, you know, if they figure out that you've got toxic metals or toxins in your system and they're just jumping right into getting rid of those things, maybe step back and, you know, think about that for a second, because, you know, ask yourself, hey, wait, are my detoxification pathways open and working the way that they're supposed to be? I just want to warn a lot of people, because we end up with a lot of really sick individuals who either under the guidance of someone who, you know, didn't know, or they were doing it themselves over, you know, stuff that they've read on the internet, which is, you know, the last bastion of bad information that we have out there. They made themselves sicker. And so we're having to deal with a much sicker individual and we can help. It's just, you can't get ahead of yourself. Healing takes time. It takes you a long time to get there. It's going to take you some time to get better. We can't just flip a switch and all of a sudden you're healed. So just keep that in mind. Sorry to kind of get off on a rant there.
Can I jump on that?
You bet.
Just a second?
Absolutely. She's hopping on the pedestal. Right.
Well, okay. So you said that about, you know, going online and getting bad information. Here's the thing. I think what's so confusing is that it's not all bad information. Mm-mm. There are times when I will look at some of these websites or, you know, on Instagram or Facebook and see what people are posting. And there are these, you know, it'll be a stay-at-home mom or, you know, a personal trainer or something. And I'm like, this information is brilliant. I mean, like, and it's really kind of shocking how much they know, but you'll see the same thing, or you'll see, you know, their doctors or these, you know, alternative medicine practitioners that are posting things. And I'm like, no, like, you can't tell people that. And so I think that's what's so frustrating is the fact that unless you really know the science, you don't know what's good and what isn't. So you can get good information, but you can also get really bad information. You're playing Russian roulette if you're relying on somebody.
Right.
Because it doesn't just go through a degree. I mean, they can have all the degrees in the world, and if...
Careful, I have a bunch of degrees.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't mean, you know, I mean, a degree by itself, though... doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean everything.
Doesn't mean
anything. You know,
I've anybody can pass a test.
Exactly. I mean, I've got a number of degrees myself, and I know a lot of people that have a lot of degrees and are not very bright. So,
And a lot of this is just experience dealing with stuff. And, you know, we have a clinic that, we deal with stuff, and it makes it fun and exciting for us because we get to figure out some of these complex cases, and usually we help them. Right.
Do you sometimes not?
Well, sometimes they don't want the help.
Yeah, I know that happens.
I mean, sometimes people, I mean, just be honest. I mean, sometimes people figure out what's really truly going on and the steps that are absolutely necessary to get healthy and well, and they literally decide to stay sick.
Right, which is always crazy to me because I'm thinking, I mean, how did you not know what you are going to get yourself into? But I do understand that this is a different way, you know, it's a very different way of looking at things, and some people think, you know, that you're going to be a lot closer to what a medical doctor would do, or, you know, a traditional medical doctor would do than what you are, because you just do things differently.
That's
what works.
That is very correct. That is very correct. All right. So some other things, you know, genetics can play a big role in this as well. So as with other body processes and disease progressions, our genetic makeup can really impact a body's ability to detoxify. I mean, there's studies back in the 80s where researchers figured out that chronic toxicity studies needed to include a bunch of different strains of mice to account for genetic variations. And some of you may be like, well, what does that matter? Well, in rodent and rat and mice studies, these things matter because they can actually pick a specific strain. These mice are bred very specifically to have very specific traits. And that's what they mean by a strain. So they need to run these tests with a bunch of different types of rats and mice, because really these lab rats, you pick up one and you can pick up the next one, and they're exactly the same. Everything about them is exactly the same. Their size, their weight, their intelligence, everything about them. But that's not the case with humans. We're all very, very different. And, you know, even identical twins, even though their genetic makeup may be very, very much the same, they can still be two completely different people affected by disease differently because of how their body actually ends up processing things out. Because one may go live with, you know, their grandparents for a month out of every year and be exposed to a lot more things than the other one who stayed at home and wasn't exposed to those things. So that makes a big difference in what we have going on. I mean, even with pharmacology, drug metabolism, that often occurs through detoxification pathways, but it's very highly dependent on genetics. This is why some people take a low dose of something and it's just like, oh my gosh, I took massive amounts of something, whereas another person can take it until they're blue in their face and it doesn't affect anything.
Right, exactly. Well, and I mean, I just think one good example of this is with pain medicine. I mean,
yes.
We see so many people who are, you know, on way too much pain medicine, but with some people, it doesn't make much of a difference.
Right.
And you have a lot of people that I know have been prescribed pain medicine. They're like, I took it once. I'll never do it again. I will live with the pain. It's horrible. They have horrible reactions to it. So it just, you know, yeah, there are huge variances in how people can react to the same thing.
Right. I mean, for those of you who don't know what I look like, I'm a relatively tall, relatively thin guy. And I remember when I was, I don't know, in college, I unfortunately had to have my wisdom teeth removed. And so the oral surgeon, I went in and had those removed. When I went back, he looked at me and made a comment about me. And I'm like, I don't really understand what you mean. Well, I woke up during the surgery. I remember waking up while he was taking my teeth out. I looked at him. I made a noise. You know, I couldn't really say much because he had his, you know, instruments in there cutting a tooth out. And he looked at me. He freaked out a little bit. The anesthesiologist was very quick on the draw with putting me back under anesthesia. And when we talked afterwards, he's like, you took twice the medications that someone twice your size would need. I don't understand what happened. And I mean, I had no, you know, not that I know of lasting side effects from that, but that just goes to show you, I mean, I'm a tall, skinny guy. And when someone, you know, I took way more medication than someone else would have needed that was usually much bigger than me. So there's a huge variability in the stuff that we're exposed to. We've got to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk about more of the genetic stuff. We're going to talk about epigenetics and gut health, and then we're going to get into methylation. And we're probably going to make this a two-part show. It's going to be exciting. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully you're not just tuning in, but if you are, today we're talking about environmental toxins here on the lovely Wellness 101 educational programming. Brought to you by the Institute of Natural Health. It's been exciting. I stumbled through some chemical words earlier. That was always fun. And we've been talking about how, before the last break, we were talking about how this toxicity is variable within different people. And I gave my little example of me getting my wisdom teeth taken out many moons ago. So I want to talk just a little bit more about this genetic makeup. We have these things that happen to us, these things called genetic SNPs or single nucleotide polymorphisms. These things can happen. They affect our genes, and they can really influence your toxicity to pretty much anything and whether or not you're going to be able to excrete things. So that's something that I want to talk about just a second. And part of that is it goes with this stuff called epigenetics, and then I want to tie that in with methylation. So before we jump dead into that, I want to talk a little bit about gut health because Aaron's raring to go about gut health. Gut health is extremely important, and we've talked about it on the show. So there's a lot of research out there that shows that air pollution and heavy metals and other things can affect our gut microbiome. And if you're not familiar with the gut microbiome, crawl out from under the rock that you've been under for the last 10 years and look at an article somewhere.
And listen to pretty much any of our other podcasts.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I feel
Tune
like
in.
We talk about it to some extent in almost every show.
Right. So basically, when we're exposed to these things, all these toxins can basically disrupt our gut bacteria. It will cause the bad bacteria that are in there to overgrow, the good bacteria to die off, and sometimes the good bacteria get all overgrown. And, you know, these things that really disrupts our gut health. And once we start affecting gut health, we affect our entire body and how it functions. So, you know, sometimes, you know, making sure that we have a healthy gut can be extremely important. And, you know, normally we would talk about that right now, but we've spent so much time talking about the toxicity. We're like I said, right before the last break, we're going to turn this into a two-part show. We're going to talk more about what you can do. But we just wanted to touch on how these toxic environmental toxins, rather, can affect our gut and really just make a mess of things. So back to the single nucleotide polymorphisms, the SNPs. So epigenetics. So we know that our DNA sequence doesn't really determine everything about us. There's a lot of research out there. We used to think that our genes, you know, determined everything about us, and they really don't. So epigenetics studies the different mechanisms that change how and when our genes are turned on or off. Think of your genetic makeup like a hallway full of light switches, and they can be flipped on or off at any given moment and turn things on that shouldn't be turned on or turn things off that shouldn't be turned off. And, you know, these effects can be transgenerational, meaning what happens to you now can affect your kids and your kids' kids and their kids and on and on. And there's actually a study on nematodes. Now, you know, it's a nematode. But hey, it's a study that talks about this. They expose nematodes to toxins, silver in particular, 10 times increased sensitivity to this heavy metal. And these effects were expressed for 10 generations of nematodes. So they exposed them to a heavy metal, and the effects from that heavy metal were found 10 generations later. I mean, that is huge. And there's a, speaking on, going right on to this epigenetics thing, there's this process in our body called methylation. We've talked about it on the show before. And methylation has to do with our a big series of chemical reactions that take place that allows our body to detoxify. And we talk about methylation in the clinic a lot. We have handouts on this. I draw on the board. You know, for those of you who are listening for the first time, I have this huge whiteboard that I like to draw on. And basically, methylation happens in our body billions of times every single second. And there's a lot of things that go in with this. And, you know, a lot of people want to throw this genetic enzyme or this genetic defect called MTHFR, methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase, for those of you taking notes at home. And they want to say, oh, well, this is the key. Well, there's a lot of other things and a lot of other genetic pieces around methylation. Our vitamin D receptor, our COMT, our catechol-O-methyltransferase, our CBS, our cystathionine beta synthase, MTRR, which affects B12. All of these things are in this whole methylation thing. And so if you have a methylation problem or a detoxification problem, we can't just look at one little piece of the puzzle. We need to look at a much bigger picture to actually figure out what's going on. And this is why it's so important to pay attention and know who you're going to get help. Because if someone tells you that you have an MTHFR defect and their answer is to give you folate, they're not doing you a service. Yes, that's going to help a little bit, but there is a whole lot of other stuff around this that matters. And a lot of times we can fix issues by looking at a bigger picture. And that stuff matters. Okay? I'll take a deep breath there. That was a long rant that I went on.
It was. And it's funny because we have a general outline of kind of what we're going to talk about. And none of that was, I mean,
I completely went off.
It said methylation. And then all of the rest of that, I'm just like, I don't even know where we're at. But all I'm thinking is this is, I mean, if you are having an issue, this is who you want to go to, right? I mean, like, because no one else would know this stuff.
I'll actually pull out the graphs. And at the office today, we pulled out a chart. Our nurse practitioner pulled out this thing. He's like, unrolled it. And he's like, what is this? And he rolled it. I say, oh, my gosh, what is all of this? It's the metabolism pathways. Remember that big poster that I have? It's like 7 feet tall and 5 feet wide. It's everything that happens in the body any given second. I have it all.
Don't think I do know that, because where would you ever put a poster that large?
I don't know, but I love it because it's got every enzyme, every reaction, how everything is tied together. And I mean, that's the sort of nerdy stuff that I like to do, is read that. So anyway, like we said, going into the last break and coming into this little segment, we're going to turn this into a part two.
There's so much to go over as far as what you can do. We're going to spend the entire next show talking about what exactly you need to do.
Right.
To, you know, avoid the most harmful toxins, what really you should be focusing on. Because I think that's really what all of you want to know now that we've thoroughly scared everybody.
Yeah,
today.
We petrified you, so you'll be scared to death for the next 7 days.
You'll have to tune in next week.
It was all a ploy.
Yeah, it will affect you for 10 generations.
10 generations. Especially if you're out there and you're
on your
nematode.
Shoulders.
That's exactly right. You're affecting the future of mankind here.
Yep.
Golly. And unfortunately, I don't think that we put enough stock into what we're doing is really affecting us long term and our kids' kids. But anyway, if you want more information, go to our website, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. You can call us at 314-293-8123. You can email us, find us on Facebook, follow us on all our social media. We're posting stuff all the time.
Yes, can I say something really quick?
Yes, very fast.
I want to thank the hundreds of people that came out for our $10 cryotherapy.
Oh,
if you
yes.
are not following us on social media, follow us because we put great deals out there. We had $10 cryotherapy this Friday and Saturday. And thank you to all of you who came. It was a joy to have you, and I hope you come back.
Until next week. Bye.